Film Nerds Unlimited. Lo-fi movie conversations with high-quality movie connoisseurs. Issue 123. Ben Flanagan of AL.com. Ben Stark of Wondermill Films.
Ben, what's up?
Hey, how's it going?
Going pretty well, and it's a great week because not only is it the summer movie season, as we've discussed here on Film Nerds Unlimited, but this is the week when a new Pixar movie opens up in theaters, which should be celebrated as a holiday, I think. And you and I, and pretty much all of the film nerds, and pretty much the entire human race, loves Pixar and loves most of the movies, almost all of the movies that they've made. I think they're one of the greatest movie studios in history, and they're obviously just one of the best collaborations in movie history when it comes to what they've done with Disney since 1995, and they're just something to celebrate at all times. And, you know, after all that they've done up to this point, I think people have sort of not gotten Pixar fatigue necessarily, but people's expectations are a little more mixed than they used to be, and they keep sort of defying the odds if Pixar and Disney are able to do that at this point, especially in 2015 when people were skeptical about the future of Pixar, that they would only be making sequels and continuations of existing properties from now on. Here they come with Inside Out, which many consider it one of their best movies yet. Of course, that came from Pete Docter, who is one of their all-star directors. And then, obviously, we think that The Good Dinosaur was a continuation of the excellence of 2015 that Pixar provided us. And so I think that their hot streak just continues, and now they've got one of those dreaded Pixar sequels coming out on Friday in Finding Dory, the follow-up to 2003's Finding Nemo, of course written and directed and created by one of the Pixar Brain Trust members, Andrew Stanton. He's back for this sequel. He's writing and directing, which should reassure a lot of Pixar fans who were perhaps pretty skeptical about another Pixar sequel. Not that Pixar has done poorly with sequels. If you discount Cars 2, their batting average is really good. But I want to gauge your excitement for this movie, Ben, because I know you're, in general, a Pixar fan, and you're a fan of what Andrew Stanton has done in his career, obviously with Finding Nemo and WALL-E, making two of the best Pixar movies. And obviously we have, I think more positive opinions about his first live-action outing, John Carter, than most people, despite its failure at the box office. So before we get into the larger topic, which will be our top five all-time Pixar movies, tell me how you're feeling about Finding Dory this week. We're 2 days out from it opening. Are you as excited about this as you would be an original Pixar offering?
Oh, it's coming out this week?
For
whatever reason, it just hasn't been huge on my radar. Not sure if that's just because I'm not in the target for the marketing for it. I really like Finding Nemo a lot, but Dory is not one of those characters that I really connect with an awful lot, so I may just not necessarily be like super interested in what happens to her next. So for whatever reason, I'm not at, peak excitement for this. I don't think because of the sequel thing, but just because for whatever reason, it hasn't really been a big blip on my radar. And I say all that knowing that they probably made an excellent film that I'm probably going to like, and that I think everybody should be excited for. I think I should be more excited for it than I am. I wish I was anticipating it more than I am, but I think that that has way less to do with external factors than it does whether or not it's a Pixar sequel or not.
So it's more about the character than it is about just the idea that it's a sequel that they're making. I think that's interesting because you would agree that there is some level of Pixar fatigue and skepticism when it comes to the studio's future and their plan now to extend these franchises that they've created. Do you consider that such a bad thing when they've given us Toy Story 2 and 3 and Monsters University and the good sequels that we've gotten from them so far?
No, absolutely not. I mean, my favorite Toy Story movie is the second one, and I think Monsters University came very close to matching the greatness of the first one. So I'm really, in general, I don't have sequel phobia, and I don't see it as a negative thing for this company. I think you know, if you're able to look at movies as show business with looking at the business part, I think it's smart for Pixar to have cash cows that generate money for them so that they can go out on a limb every now and then and make a very interesting short or a very interesting feature even, and be a little bit more risky with that. If Cars 2 hadn't made a bunch of money, who knows if we would have gotten Inside Out, you know? I mean, it's the old Looney Tunes model where Chuck Jones and the other animators would get their budget. They would knock out a bunch of lucrative Roadrunner cartoons that were cheap to produce and easy to make and quick to make. And then they would spend the rest of their schedule and budget on a single Bugs Bunny cartoon, like What's Opera Doc or one of those are really artistically out there and intricate. So it's that model of, all right, we know what people will buy, so let's make sure that people buy that so that we have plenty of margin to, you know, really really take the gloves off and play. And I think that that's the kind of freedom that you only get when you're a reasonably self-contained studio like Pixar, even though it's owned by Disney. And I think that's great, and I think it's a great model. And they've only made, in my opinion, a single bad feature film. And yes, that happens to be a sequel. It's Cars 2. But other than that, I mean, I guess we're all going to get tired of everything eventually, and that's just what it seems like with Pixar. It's like they keep doing good stuff, and we're no matter if it keeps being good, you know, all lobster, you eat enough lobster, tastes like soap eventually. And I guess that's where we're at with Pixar, is they keep delivering good stuff. We're a year out from Inside Out, and everybody hailed that as a masterpiece, and now we've got another Pixar movie coming out, and everybody is, I mean, I do sense a general malaise with it. And it's like, well, what do you want from these people? I guess is what I would ask the Pixar skeptics.
You know, I think that there's a strange word association that is weirdly automatic with people that sort of propels this sense of skepticism when it comes to Pixar, which is in no way earned for the studio, considering they've given us 15 incredible movies, or at least 14 for me. You know, I'm not the biggest fan of Cars. I'll acknowledge that if you just judge it as, you know, a well-told story, fine. It's good enough. It's just not my favorite. It would rank last for me right now among the Pixar movies. But I think the word association thing is if you say Pixar sequels, then people are just going to quickly assume you mean Cars 2. And that's what all the Pixar sequels are going to be like. It's sort of the symbol of the nature of Hollywood and the fact that a beloved studio like Pixar, with so much creativity under its belt, would fall into the same trap that so many other studios would fall into, this precious commodity that fans turn to for the lone voice in purely original storytelling, would somehow succumb to the sequel sensation. That must be a negative thing. And Cars 2 is really not, it's not the best indicator for what this studio is obviously capable of when it comes to making sequels or prequels or just extending, again, these pre-existing universes. Again, I think you have to look towards their first sequel, Toy Story 2, which, like you said, your favorite Toy Story movie, is just another Pixar masterpiece, and it's so much fun, and showed you so early on what 1999, what these folks were capable of. What was that? Was that their fourth movie, I think, at that point? And
yeah,
or
no,
third. Yeah, the
yeah,
third.
It was after Bugs Bunny,
Monsters Inc.
Exactly.
Right. So yeah, so that told you very early on that these are still very creative people who care deeply about these characters. And then you move on to Toy Story 3. Which I think is better than Toy Story 2, and in the hands of a brand new director, right? So there's a little bit of worry when it's out of the hands of the guy who gave us the first two, John Lasseter. Now we have Lee Unkrich. Who's this guy? Oh, he's part of Pixar. So that must mean that he's a talented person who probably cares deeply about storytelling, along with, like you said, the business of the show business. And then you get Monsters University, which I think a lot of people, for a lot of people, is sort of on the negative side of that fence when it comes to the nature of the beast, the sequel prequel era of Hollywood. I personally think that movie's underrated and just tons of fun. And so I don't know. I just have the feeling that my attitude about it is there are just too many talented people at the studio still who care so deeply about characters and about storytelling, and those things still seem to come first, that they're just not going to waste 4 years of their life and 4 years of their time on churning out sequel fodder that will just make the powers that be happy with a bottom line sensibility. Like, it just doesn't ring true to me. And so I still look forward to any new Pixar movie, be it a sequel or be it an original film. In fact, I mean, if you think of something like The Good Dinosaur, you know, I think expectations were a little low for that too, because it was less familiar and people had sort of become comfortable with this sense that Pixar was moving ahead with sticking with brand and sticking with the characters and worlds that they had already created. So by the time something like Brave or The Good Dinosaur came out, people, I think, were slightly hesitant to sort of give themselves to those movies because they didn't fit the mold of these established characters and movies that they had already put forth. So I think right now expectations are a little wonky when it comes to how people view Pixar. They're not as excited about the sequels, and they're not as strangely skeptical about the original stuff. Do you get that same sense?
Well, to play devil's advocate for a moment, maybe some of that skepticism is internal. I mean, you think about, you mentioned Brave and Good Dinosaur. Those are both non-sequel original Pixar films that both had regime changes midway through, and you wonder if, well, what if this is getting to them? What if they realize, well, we don't have a sequel on our hands, but it needs to be successful, and it doesn't seem like it's working exactly the way we need it to, so maybe Pixar had got a little bit of cold feet on those projects and decided to go, like you said, these guys craft things from beginning to end and don't want anything subpar to come out of the studio. So I wonder, I just think that's worth noting that two of their, I mean, really, all their original movies since Up are Brave, Inside Out, and The Good Dinosaur, right? And two of those were taken over, and one of those was in the capable hands of a Pixar veteran. So that's kind of the next, that's kind of, I think, a topic going forward to see is, I mean, we know what the original generation of Pixar filmmakers can do when they're not being micromanaged, but what about the next generation? And, you know, should we be worried that they're going to be, now that Pixar is what it is, if they're going to be, I guess, corralled in a way that the originals weren't. I feel like I touched on like three different things there, but does my logic kind of make sense there?
No, it totally does. But I think the shorts that obviously precede the feature films are a great indicator for what we can look forward to at the future of Pixar. I mean, I go to The Good Dinosaur and I see something like Sanjay's Super Team, which was incredible, and I think, wow, the future is really bright for this company, because you have somebody, and I forget the filmmaker's name, but you have somebody with as much talent as he obviously has who can tell such a compelling and thoughtful and touching story and just exciting in terms of action, somebody who has that much capability to do that in the span of 5 minutes, I think – If this guy gets a feature, I'm there just based on that. And so I just keep going back to the fact that I think that story still comes first for Pixar. They've just proven it time in and time out that it's all about character. It's all about driving the narrative, and that the rest of it will sort of take care of itself. And they've just made great movies, and they've earned our trust. And somebody like Andrew Stanton has earned our trust. And I keep going back to that when it's Finding Dory. Andrew Stanton is 2 for 2 with directing Pixar movies, and he's obviously played an even larger role in helping Pixar grow and being a part of other movies, whether that's as a writer or as a co-director or a producer or what have you. But I think the guy's a great director. He's been one of my favorite directors in recent memory because of those Pixar movies. And if this was good enough for him, then it's good enough for me. And people might view it as sort of a rebound for him after the whole John Carter thing, that he's sort of crawling back to Pixar and sort of picking himself back up in familiar territory. But I'm totally fine with it. I really like the Dory character a lot. Like you said, I don't know that Finding Nemo was a universe that needed more exploration. They found Nemo, so where do you go from there? A new story would seem a little bit contrived, but, you know, I thought that Ellen DeGeneres' performance was great. It's one of those voice performances, I think, that you have to – it sort of puts that idea in your head that why aren't voice performances – I think they are eligible for Oscars, but why don't people think about that more? And, I mean, I go back to Inside Out and some other recent Pixar movies where I think the same thing, where it's like, man, they just get so much out of – these performers, and you don't expect it. I don't think a lot of people expected a great supporting performance from Ellen DeGeneres, but she certainly delivered it, and I thought it was a great character. And does she deserve her own movie? I guess so. I mean, if Andrew Stanton says, yeah, sure, let's do it, then again, I'm in. So my level of excitement for Finding Dory is as high as it is for pretty much any Pixar movie. Does that change because it's a sequel? And because it's not something brand new from a guy who gave us brand new things in Finding Nemo and Wall-E and Andrew Stanton? Maybe a little bit, just because I'd love to see him continue that trend of offering new things and really giving us, as movie fans and fans of this studio, just these new, pure, magical experiences. But I think more than anything, just because it's a Pixar movie and it's a new Andrew Stanton movie, I'm just so excited.
Yeah, Stanton is a big selling point for me too. Even if it is a rebound project for him, I don't blame him, because Pixar seems to be a safe and happy place to make a movie, and there's nothing wrong with wanting to do that. You wonder the same thing about Brad Bird with The Incredibles 2 after Tomorrowland didn't do very well. And so if that's the narrative that's being told, I can kind of see that. If that's true, I'm okay with it, but I don't think it necessarily is true. But I think at the end of the day, this is a guy who wants to make good movies, like you said, and I don't think, you know, ego or money are really factors there, based on the work that he's given us. So I see your concern with the, you know, would be great to get another original thing from Andrew Stanton. But again, you know, that Pixar model, who knows, you know, however much money Finding Dory is going to make. I assume it's going to be a lot. Whatever the case, you hope that this is going to give, well, first of all, you hope that the movie is as excellent as it very well can be. But also you hope that it gives him and Pixar, enough leeway to do, you know, something maybe a little bit more risky going forward.
Yeah, totally. And I wonder if it sort of the fact that he's even doing this sequel and coming back to Pixar sort of devalues him in the eyes of fans of his and fans of Pixar. I certainly hope not, because it's good news that he's back,
I think,
and that he's making this movie.
I think it probably devalues him to, you know, the sharks in Hollywood, you know, that he may want jobs from. Well, he may want the next John Carter from, but...
Well, John Carter did that.
True, but I think the fact that he's going back to where he started, I think you know, there's probably some sort of weird social Darwinism way that some of the psychopaths that run studios look at this, where it's, you know, it's this guy is clearly didn't have the guts to make a big blockbuster, so he's going back to his cartoon factory to do that. I mean, I don't think that. I'm just saying I wouldn't be surprised if that was or among, you know, among kind of cutthroat journalists out there or something like that. I wouldn't be surprised if that was the narrative. But I think that at the end of the day, who the hell cares about those people? Let's just let our filmmakers make the movies they want to make when they want to make them.
Right, and it's not like he's self-financing some sort of indie project to find some sort of internal catharsis. He's making a movie for Pixar and Disney, movies that, you know, tend to make hundreds of millions of dollars worldwide. So it's quite a place to find yourself again as a storyteller.
Sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, so I think that's enough on Finding Dory. We're both pumped for it and pumped for the return of Andrew Stanton to Pixar. And it opens on Friday. But the real reason we're here, Ben, is to reflect on Pixar as a whole and share with these folks our top five Pixar movies. The Pixar list, just the general list of what 16 movies to make, is hard enough as it is. And climbing all the way to the top of the heap and into the upper echelon of the Pixar, you know, canon, that is even harder. So I'm going to let you start it off with number five.
Are we, did you say number five or number 50? Because I did all the shorts, too.
Oh, God. Okay? Can we keep it to features?
Yeah, we will. But a few years ago, I did spend a few months, whenever I had a spare minute or five, I went out and looked at as many as of the Pixar shorts as I could find. And you can actually find a tremendous amount of them out there between different DVDs and online things. So I think I have actually seen every single Pixar movie ever, including shorts and everything like that. So I do have a Letterboxd list that maybe I'll put the link in the post for this. So I won't include the shorts, but I'll throw out a few of my favorites: La Luna, Partly Cloudy, Day and Night, For the Birds, and Bounden. I think those are a lot of fun. We mentioned The Next Generation earlier. Pete Soane of Partly Cloudy just picked up the directing reins for The Good Dinosaur and did a great job. So, like you said, and Sanjay Super Team should be on that list too. So there's a lot of great Pixar shorts out there. So I would definitely encourage people not to overlook those. But yeah, so just looking at the features, narrowing it down to five is so very hard, and I feel so guilty leaving out some of these. And it's one of those lists that, ask me tomorrow, and it'll probably shift around and change a little bit. At the end of the day, I just kind of have to go with my gut and my heart on these. And following that logic, my number five is one that we've talked about already, and it's Monsters, Inc. It's one of the most imaginative movies. I think a lot of people consider it a lighter Pixar movie, but I think just the pure imagination, the humor, the Art Deco, not really Art Deco, but the kind of the 1930s screwball comedy style of it all, is just fantastic. Now that I have a daughter at home, the movie, you know, takes on so much more weight when you see this little person that's entrusted to you, you know, can respond with fear or with laughter, and what those two different things, seeing those two different things on her face, what that does to you. I think it's just a magical movie. It's pure creativity. It's just so much fun. And Billy Crystal and John Goodman, they're just great. The chemistry is fantastic, and I think that the pairing of Mike and Sully is one of the most magical things in all of Pixar. I think that's just a great friendship.
It's a great pick, and I want to preface my list by saying Monsters, Inc. was my number five and was for a long time one of my favorite Pixar movies for all the reasons that you just mentioned. It's got arguably the greatest final moment in a Pixar movie to date.
Dear Lord.
Yeah, it's just amazing, and Pete Docter proved so early on that he is the king of pulling heartstrings and the king of the Pixar tearjerker with that movie. So, yeah, that just barely missed my list. And taking its place, last year's Inside Out, a movie that has been just such an enormous part of my life for the past year, ever since it came out in summer 2015. I've watched this movie so many times, and I only saw it once in the theater, and it was a room full of kids, loud kids who were not in school and were just excited to be at the movies. And, you know, that movie's a lot to really absorb the first time you see it. And so I enjoyed it, and it was just a wonderful experience, but I just never thought I got the full Inside Out experience that first time. But I've probably seen it, you know, upwards of 15 times since then now. Just, I own it on Blu-ray. It comes on cable all the time, and it's as good as ever. And it's just such an amazing concept and such a well-told story. Again, Pete Docter is one of the MVPs of Pixar, just a terrific storyteller who always puts character first. And just the color of it, the design of it, the animation is just immaculate. And really what helps set it apart for me, always Michael Giacchino's score. His original score here is one of his best. It's one of the best themes in the Pixar universe. So number five, one of the recent ones, Inside Out.
Yeah, it's all right. My number four is Toy Story 2. Again, we covered this a little bit ago. I think that I really like the original Toy Story, but it kind of, I feel like you can see the limitations of the technology and where they were at with their ability to tell the story. It's kind of like an X-Men X2 situation, I think, a little bit, where that you could tell that the filmmaker was brimming with the movie he wanted to make, but didn't have everything he needed to make that movie. And then I think with Toy Story 2, they took a lot of those ideas, built on them, and made this really sprawling, imaginative action movie, really, this rescue movie that it does what all the Pixar movies, or many of the best Pixar movies, really do. It gives us these heroes and main characters that can't fully trust themselves, and their motivations aren't pure, and they need their friends to check their motivations for them and to kind of keep them focused on really what's important in life. And I think that this movie does that in a really interesting way, and it's the way it deals with nostalgia and the pull of that, and how we deal with the past and how we deal with rejection. You know, we can either become bitter or we can move on and make new relationships. I think it's all there, and it's really beautiful. I think that, speaking of tear jerking, there's the whole Jesse's flashback sequence, which is one of the most heartbreaking things in any of the Pixar movies, which is, as you mentioned, saying an awful lot. So I think, it's all of those things. But again, going back to, it's also just a really, really great imaginative action movie. And it's a movie about nerds, you know? And it's got a lot of, I don't know, I feel like it's where Pixar really went from a group of very talented storytellers that were working on kids movies to, I feel like this is the first movie where there was something subtle that really appealed to adults, teenagers, and everybody else when we saw, we saw this nerd villain, this collector villain, you know, who stands in for so much of nerd culture. And you look back at the past of what these characters, where these characters came from, and what the pop culture of this universe used to be like. There's just so much rich stuff going on. And then you have that opening sequence, which is, you know, a better Star Wars movie than any of the prequels. And there's so much to enjoy in this movie. And, it gets a little bit better every time I see it.
You know, that's an interesting pick for sure. And I know that Toy Story 2 really stands out in that trilogy for a lot of people. And when it came out back in 99, people sort of immediately hailed it as the better of the two, the rare situation where a sequel is better than its original. And it took me a while to come around on Toy Story 2's greatness, to be honest with you. I kind of wrestled with it for a while because, probably out of loyalty for the first Toy Story movie, which is actually my number four, which you really crapped all over leading up to your number four pick, Toy Story 2, but that's okay.
It sucks.
Yeah, pretty much, in for all the reasons that you said. But to be quite honest with you, I really love it for all of the reasons that you just outlined for loving Toy Story 2. And I also think it's interesting that you say that this is kind of the movie that they really wanted to make now that, you know, that they were able to make sort of the technological advances perhaps at Pixar and computer animation. But I think that Toy Story is stunning. I really do. And it holds up. The script is just so strong, and the characters and the dynamics between Woody and all of the, I mean, again, it just goes back to the first time, right? Like, this is the first Pixar outing, and it just felt so special back in 1995, and it still feels really special to me. It flies by, and it just tells such a simple, wonderful story that really explores so many different emotional dynamics and levels. And I mean, starting with, again, that sort of fantastical element of what happens when you leave your room, do your toys come to life? And that's just a really fun concept. But really, the larger question, how do you feel, or what do you do when you're replaced by a newer model? And it explores that rejection theme that you mentioned in Toy Story 2, when Andy chooses Buzz over Woody, this toy that has just really defined his childhood for so many years, and he's willing to throw it all away because of this souped-up astronaut or space adventurer in Buzz Lightyear, just really beautifully voiced by Tim Allen, a great comedic performance. But really, the heart of it is obviously Woody and the job that Tom Hanks does in that role and setting up that universe, and just really just this introspective adventure and this crazy hero's journey that he goes on in that movie. And I just really love it. It's all about sort of losing himself and finding him and his role and understanding how his role has been redefined within that household and what he means to Andy, and the fact that, you know, he'll never lose his spot in Andy's heart, you know, no matter how old he gets. And that obviously is explored all the way to Toy Story 3, which is a just wonderful movie and my second favorite Toy Story movie, to be sure. But yeah, I've got to say, the original holds up and belongs in the top five. So my number four, Toy Story.
My number three is WALL-E, which was for a long time my number one. It really blew me away in the theater. It's I think you can call it a sci-fi classic. It's just a really imaginative look at the future of Earth and of space. There's just so much fun stuff going on here, and it says so much. And WALL-E himself is this incredible creation. There's so many different things you can go on, but I know a lot of people, you know, talk about how great the first hour, first act, or whatever you want to call it, is. But I really think that this is a movie that holds up from beginning to end and has really simple, direct stakes that are followed through and paid off beautifully all up to those amazing end credits. So it's a movie that I feel like, in a strange way, is everybody accepts as being pretty great, but I still think is strangely underrated.
Yeah, you might be right, you know, and I'm one of the ones that is underrating it now. I mean, when it initially came out, I thought it was great, and again, it was one that I had really super high hopes for, with Andrew Stanton making his first movie since Finding Nemo. But I looked at my Letterboxd list today, and I've got WALL-E ranked like 10th or 11th in my Pixar rankings, which just feels mean
yeah.
to me. But no, I mean, yeah, the first 40
Are
minutes.
Are you a robot?
Well, that's the thing. It's like the first 40 minutes are so wonderful, and it's just filled with such incredible visual storytelling and establishing that silent character, pretty much, that it's just so wonderful and one that, you know, could be revisited, and I'd certainly be happy to do that. But for me, strangely, yeah, it's funny you ask, are you a robot? Because the movie, in a way, kind of shifts, not necessarily in a downward slope, but in a way that I thought, wow, wasn't that first act so great? When we finally catch up with the humans on the colony in outer space, and going back and watching it, everything about that movie works. But just the movie really belongs to WALL-E and Eva and obviously the other robots that WALL-E encounters on the colony, sort of those outcasts that he helps free during the second latter part of the movie. It's just really again wonderful visual storytelling, something that Stanton is obviously great at, and something that Pixar puts a great emphasis on. So, yeah, it's really terrific. My number three is The Incredibles, Brad Bird's first foray, obviously, into the Pixar universe, and God almighty, this movie is like the most fun you'll ever have at the movies, and is just so rich in visual design, in script, in pretty much everything about it, the look, the characters, the story. I mean, this is just one of the greatest, not only one of Pixar's best movies, it's one of the best superhero movies ever made, it's one of the best action movies ever made. And again, I love Pixar sort of exploring these themes of getting too old and sort of running out of steam and finding a second wind in the latter part of your life and figuring out just how much you have to offer, even though you're sort of past your prime. And the emphasis on family that this movie puts is really incredible, especially, I mean, obviously we're parents now, and sort of, and I think watching a lot of these Pixar movies, it really goes to a deeper level now that we're sort of going through that journey. So, you know, I have a feeling this could come up again, so I'm just going to leave it at that. Your number two.
My number two is the thing you just said. It's The Incredibles, and it's you're right. It's amazing. It's one of those movies that every time I think about it, I'm like, well, why am I not watching this movie right now? Why don't I just drop what I'm doing and go watch The Incredibles? Because that's going to improve my day no matter what's going on. And I think that for some reason, when this movie first came out, it didn't stick with me, and it's weird because it seems totally totally up my alley. You know, it's a comic book movie. It's the score is clearly influenced by Honor Majesty's Secret Service by John Barry. There's just so much going on. I'm a big fan of the Iron Giant. That it seems like it was like almost tailor made for me. But for whatever reason, whatever was going in my life at the time, it just didn't really stick with me, and it took you know almost 5 or 6 years of just watching it every now and then to realize, hey, I'm a big old idiot for not thinking that this is great, and it was my number one Pixar movie, and maybe again someday, but it was my number one Pixar movie for a long time. But it's like you said, it's great. Brad Bird is one of my all-time favorite directors, based on just a handful of movies, and this one is right there, just based on how he moves his camera and how he composes scenes. It's masterful stuff, and we should hurry up and finish so I can go watch The Incredibles.
it's like movie crack for movie fans.
Yeah,
really.
There you go.
In the pace, it's just outrageous. So, yeah, it's awesome, and it's a wonder that it's neither of our number one. My number two, honestly, yep. Number one and number two for me are kind of interchangeable, but today I'm going to go with Brad Bird again, and I'm going to go with Ratatouille, which is just the most unlikely masterpiece that I can recall in recent memory, this just strange concept of a rat who is a chef, a high-end chef at that, in Paris, France. It's just such an amazing sentence. Whoever came up with that idea and how that pitch meeting went, I'll never know. But wow, it just turned into such a beautiful story and a movie that celebrates artists and just art in general, I think. And it's just such a wonderful message to people to really keep at it, even in the face of extreme adversity. And yeah, again, I mean, there's amazing visual storytelling here, but Patton Oswalt does a great job in the lead role as Remy, this rat who can cook. And I think that this movie just has some really wonderful moments in it that take it to that next level, where it really gets to the heart of the matter and really the hearts of its viewers. And my favorite stuff is often when he hallucinates this Chef Gusteau, who I believe is voiced by Brad Garrett, who really, I say hallucinates, you know, he comes off as this extra character, but I mean, he is a figment of Remy's imagination, and this is his internal drive that is pushing him to reach that next level and to chase his dream, and that really speaks a lot to that one character, Remy, that he's able to use that and motivate himself. And it's a great buddy movie too, when he obviously links up with Linguini, who's a really fun character. I think is voiced by a Pixar writer or Pixar staff member. I can't remember his name, but it's really beautiful. And obviously, you could, like the big moment is obviously the Anton Ego flashback, and then his subsequent sort of soliloquy where he reads his review, and it's just really gorgeous filmmaking, and again, just unlikely circumstances that propelled this movie to being one of the Pixar masterpieces and one of its big hits too.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, it's on my list of ones that it hurt to leave off Ratatouille. I remember watching the movie in the theater and being so blown away, and then seeing it again and thinking that end moment wasn't going to work, and well, there it was, working for me all over again. You know, it's one where the mechanics of it, for whatever reason, just kind of, it's kind of like with Dude Wally, you know, there's some plot mechanics of it that just stand out so much that I have a hard time getting over them. But at the same time, it's such a beautiful movie. And like you said, it's such a healthy movie. Funny enough that it's about food, but it's just such a healthy movie for all of us to look at, and obviously especially kids, but almost even more so adults, we have so much trouble defining why we think the things we think, and maybe we need some help in forming those opinions. And there are people out there, you know, that it's their jobs to have that dialogue, but we don't appreciate those people. You know, we think that those people are threats to us. So I think that there's so many different conversations that you can have about this movie about the rat that cooks, and it's fantastic. My number one is my number one film of last year. We talked about it in our wrap up earlier this year. It's called Inside Out, and you had it as your number five for some reason. But yeah, this is a movie that it got me from possibly the first shot, the first notes on the soundtrack. As soon as it started, I was like, well, here we go. This is going to be ugly. And through the end, it stuck with me. I mentioned Ratatouille is a healthy movie. I've talked before about how I think that Inside Out is good for humanity, and it's a movie that every child should watch, and we should all watch this movie and think about it and speak its language to help understand ourselves better. I think it's on top of all those weighty things, it's also just super fun, super bright characters. Amy Poehler has this infectious energy in everything she does, and she manages to amp that up for this. The character of Bing Bong is one of the great Pixar side characters. The sequence of them going into the subconscious and basically de-evolving through the history of art in a way is one of the most audacious things you'll see in a major motion picture. So it's overall it checks every box. Pete Docter's a genius, and this movie is a miracle.
Yeah, that moment is so just transcendent for movies, like you said, and you start scratching your head in sort of excitement and wondering, how did that get in here? You know, and like what's going on here? Why is this happening? This is so wonderful. And yeah, that movie is just such an emotional, like you're an emotional wreck, like you said, moments into the movie. And it's, maybe it's because of Michael Giacchino's score, which is just so like just gut wrenching. And that's just what he does. But yeah, that movie is something else. And yeah, maybe it does climb to the top, you know, when all is said and done. But I mean, the fact that it's number five already, like when I first saw it, I just wasn't ready the first time I saw it to say, yeah, this is one of the best Pixar movies ever. When I heard people saying this is the best Pixar movie, I thought, how could that be with all these masterpieces? But it belongs in the conversation. I mean, it is just one of those once in a blue moon things. So that's a great pick and a worthy number one. My number one in honor of this week, I guess, it's just a coincidence, I promise, the opening of Finding Dory, is Finding Nemo. The movie is just movie magic, and is, for me, among all of the Pixar movies, it's the one that I really felt transported me to another place under the sea, in just the richest animation and the richest world building that I think Pixar has offered so far. And I bought this movie on DVD, I guess it was fall 2003, and it came with just like a load of special features. And I watched the movie literally like 10 times. I just couldn't get enough of it in like the span of a week. And I just watched the journey that Andrew Stanton went on from beginning to end in creating this movie and telling the story and how passionate he was as a filmmaker. And it really made me fall for the movie on a much deeper level. And I mean, I haven't seen this movie since I became a parent, and I can only imagine that it's only going to go that much further than it already has. I mean, the fact this movie is about losing your child and the lengths at which you will go to retrieve that child and to reunite with your kid. Like, I cannot imagine what that feeling must be like for a parent, and I can't imagine what it would be like when I watch this movie again this week. Hopefully I'll be able to revisit it, but the characters are just so much fun. The script is just on fire. The score by Thomas Newman, to me, is one of the all-time great just movie scores. It just has so much to offer. And yeah, like, I don't know, like, it's just such a rich experience that I think I'd want to watch on an annual basis, if not more. I can't wait until my daughter is old enough to really want to watch it and really appreciate it. And we can share that together. Hopefully she'll like it. We'll see. But yeah, and, you know, it makes me excited for this new movie coming up. And neither has to do with one another just yet. In the meantime, I'm just going to celebrate the greatness of Finding Nemo. Just, God, again, we go back to these opening moments from Pixar and just how they rope you in and how they really punch you in the gut emotionally. That opening scene where Marlin loses his wife and most of his children, all but one, who is also physically and emotionally damaged. It's just such the enormity of that moment is so apparent, you know, from the word go, and the fact that these guys like Stanton and Doctor and Laster and all these folks who make these movies at Pixar, the fact that they care so much about story that they hit you on that kind of level in the opening moments and prepare you emotionally for these journeys that they take you on. I think Finding Nemo is arguably the best example of that.
Yeah, those opening moments are just plain cruel. But yeah, it's a great pick. It's on my list of ones that I wish I could have fit in there. It's been a long time since I've seen it, so I definitely need to revisit it. I don't know if I'll have time to do that before Finding Dory comes out, but yeah, I mean, it's such a great pick, and you know, if anybody picked any Pixar movie as their number one, I probably wouldn't have too much of an issue with them unless they said one of the Cars movies, and I think that's a pretty boring opinion to have, but it rings true. They're all pretty great. I mean, do you have any that were very close to your top five?
You know, I mentioned Monsters, Inc. that had been number five for a long time, but I recently watched Up in the past year or so, and I really liked Up a lot, and it just had so much to offer the first time I saw it. But the recent rewatch that I had with it, I was an emotional wreck just 5 minutes into the movie. And obviously there's the famous sequence, the married life sequence, that just does horrible things to your eyes and to your, just really to your soul as you're watching it. But I mean, those first few notes of Michael Giacchino's theme, Oscar winning theme that he created. Holy, did you hear that?
Yeah. What the hell is that?
That was like the biggest thunderclap and lightning bolt I've ever seen.
Holy crap. That's
yeah.
Incredible.
So, had to take a break there for
a
second. No, but does God disagree with me on
God
the
hates Up? Yeah.
Maybe it should have been in the top five. I don't know. But no, I mean, when I hear the first few notes of that music, it just, I literally like lose it. And at the end, when he's pinning the Ellie badge, the grape soda badge, on the kid at the ceremony, I just like am beside myself every single time. So I think that it's an honorary top fiver for sure.
Yeah. And there's just so much joy in the character of Doug. It's another one of those that hurt to be left off. The last one I'll mention is Monsters University. I think that's a severely underrated movie. It's from beginning to end. It's so colorful and imaginative. And then, basically the moral of the movie is so so gutsy that it just immediately became one of my favorites. So that one, with time, may enter my top five.
No, you're exactly right. Super underrated. I'm an idiot because I missed it in the theater.
Me too. Yep.
Yeah, neglected a Pixar movie. I learned my lesson once I watched it. It's really terrific, and I'd recommend it to really anybody. And shame on Pixar skeptics out there who hate on that movie. It's wonderful. And if we're going to bat for the underrated movies real quick, again, last year, The Good Dinosaur is what a great just family movie that every family should watch. It's wonderful, and I hate that it had to pale in comparison to Inside Out last year for so many people. I think it has just as much to offer in many ways as Inside Out did, so people need to see The Good Dinosaur. It's a great film. And Brave, for me, Brave is just a wonderful, wonderful story and really a sort of, in a way, subversion of the traditional Disney princess narrative and just a great movie that young girls should see too. I can't wait to show it to my daughter. It's a great mother-daughter movie specifically, but yeah, I'll go to bat for Brave and The Good Dinosaur any day of the week.
Absolutely. Yeah, those are two that I need to take another look at, but are definitely not the misfires that they're often characterized as. Well, this was a lot of fun. I feel like I need to watch every single one of these things again three times.
Yeah, I can't figure out which one I'm about to go put in the Blu-ray player. Maybe I'll start with my number one, Finding Nemo. How about you?
Yeah, that might make sense, although The Incredibles is one of the most rewatchable things ever, so maybe I just need to do that for the 900th time.
For more Film Nerds Unlimited, go to filmnerds.com or find us on Facebook and Twitter. If you like what you hear, rate and review our podcast on iTunes. Keep an eye out for the next issue of Film Nerds Unlimited, coming soon.